Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Lemon Tea, a unique twist on America's favorite light lager.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title. Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
So what were you doing up in the North Central Arkansas?
Yes, correct. Geography's spot on there. I was in Mountain Home this weekend. The Baxter County Razorback Club had their annual golf tournament.
And you were the key speaker.
No, didn't speak at all, except at myself and my ball a little bit. We had a little chat on occasion, but no speaking, just golfing.
Just golfing. How'd you shoot?
There were some good
Be
positive
honest
things.
Now.
There were some positive things that came out of it, and then there were a few negative things that came out of it. Golf and baseball have to be the two most frustrating sports at times. Because both days I played really well for about 12 or 13 holes. And I didn't know if you could pick which 12 or 13 holes, and you could say, hey, partner here. Hey, Tabes, pick me up on these four or five. That's the how do pros do it? That was one thought I was having yesterday. It's so hard. I can put eight or nine holes together sometimes, have a decent front nine or a decent nine-hole stretch. It is so difficult for me to put 18 good holes together where one or two holes just don't ruin the scorecard. How do pros do it? Not for just 18. They do it for 72 holes in a row. They're going to make any real money.
Mm-hmm.
Big money.
Yeah. People like Brooks Koepka, who's just always in the mix of it. It's like, what do you do? And he doesn't even play that much.
I think really the hardest sport to master and to be elite at and to be Brooks Koepka, Tiger Woods, Roy McIlroy, get in that conversation has to be golf.
It has to be. And that's why I respect
know
golfers
think, well,
more than anything.
Well, golf, you don't have to be an athlete to be golf. Bull butter. Bull butter.
Yeah, you try walking 72 holes. Well,
that's
just saying,
the easy part.
Well, I know, but that's what I'm saying. Doing that on top of playing golf, being athletic, and all of that. So, no, I'm with you on that one. I'm with you on that one. But golf is supposed to be fun,
no,
Tommy.
We had a
remember
good time.
That.
We shot 81-77, which wasn't very good for C-flight.
It sounds good for me.
It was a four ball, not a scramble, by the way. I just want to clarify that.
Oh, okay.
That was a four ball score, not a scramble score.
Oh, so you guys didn't win, though, huh?
I don't know. I did the parking lot trot, and I don't even know. I told him to send my gold bullion via FedEx or something.
Okay. Is it a nice course, though?
Oh, Big Creek is outstanding.
Okay.
One of the best courses in the state. I'm not just pandering and kissing up. I really believe that.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that
it is an awesome golf course.
Today, we're going to be golfing. Reportedly, as long as the weather holds out, which it looks like it's going to for the most part.
I don't know if I'm crossing my fingers. I'm just not sure which way. If four straight days of golf is good for me mentally, physically, no problem.
Yeah, because you're in peak
condition.
I
am in peak physical condition. You're correct. But I'm just peaking in the wrong places.
But
more in the midsection.
But you would think it would help, though, because it's like you've got your practice in,
You know what? You're correct about that.
You would think.
Have you practiced at all? Have you hit one range ball?
No.
All right. See, the thing is, there's no expectation. You go to this today, for those that don't know what we're talking about, Chad Morris brought back last year the coaches' media golf tournament.
It went away under Brett Bielema, right?
Bielema got rid of it. Like, they had it one year, and it rained, and we didn't actually play. We just ate, which was his favorite part, and then we left. We did some interviews, and we left.
Another reason he should have been fired.
Nutt did this. Petrino was all about it.
Petrino loved golf, man.
And, then Bielema got away from it. So now we're back.
And that's what we're doing today, around
today,
1 o'clock.
You know, it's about time to start practice when us hacks are out there with the coaches playing golf. And I'm not sure who's worse, the coaches or the media. It may be a draw.
Good.
The media may actually be better.
Okay, so
and really what you don't want is a coaching staff full of great golfers.
No, because then it's kind of puts a damper on media members going out there and making fools of themselves.
It will be interesting. There will not be a high level of the football season better turn out than the golf today. That's all I can say.
Well, okay, so let me ask you, because I didn't get to go to this last year. You went last year.
Right.
I don't remember why I didn't go, but I think you
something about the lunch wasn't
high brown or something like that. Or Tommy was like, "I'm going, you're staying because I need to make sure that you stay in your place." Exactly. One of those things. But
they happened today.
Last year,
Ty, you got in clubs.
Yeah, last year you discussed how it played out and how it went, and you mentioned the fact that there were certain media members there. So my question is, who is good in the media? If you're saying that the media could be better than the coaches. Who is the people I need to watch out for? I need to catch to.
Well, I mean, you're very familiar with Trey Schaaf. He's probably the best media golfer.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, the guy golfs all the time, and right. He's won a few tournaments here and there. So, yeah, I already know about him.
Mike Irwin is not someone you probably need to watch out for.
Okay, good. No offense to Mike.
I think I played with Hutch last year.
Is he any good?
I think. He was okay.
Just okay? Okay.
It just depends on what you think good golf is.
Competent, like you can get the ball down the fairway on a drive pretty consistently.
I say this with all sincerity and honesty. I'm not sure who's worse, you or Ruskin, because both of you may be slightly better. He took a month off and quit when we played in one of these deals down at SEC Media Days. Used to have a deal like this, and we'd go play one afternoon.
Nice,
and it wasn't good. He said, "I'm putting the clubs up." He said, and his dad is a fantastic golfer. I don't know. He missed that lesson in life somewhere. But you're right there about with him.
Yeah, I'm not very good.
I'm just hoping you hit enough shots that we get to actually ride in the cart to the ball.
Yeah. Assuming that me and you play together, because you never know. They may split us up. They may be like, okay, we don't need to put these
two
together.
Who do I need to call
together
to make sure that happens?
Yeah. Well, apparently Kyle Parkinson, the SID up there, take care of it for you. But, no, I would fully admit I am not that good. Now, there are parts of my game.
Well, there's not good, and then there's you.
Yeah. Well, no, hold on a second. There's parts of my game that I feel that I am at least competent at, and that is in my short game and in putting. I'm decent at those things. And when I say decent, I mean I actually feel comfortable enough to walk up there and possibly get lucky enough to sink a putt. Well, that's where I'm looking at. I can't drive for anything, though. Right. Nothing. Nothing at all. So, just saying. It could be a lot worse. But who knows, Tommy, I could surprise you. Maybe it's just the fact that the times we played, you put so much pressure on me and there was a lot of stress. I'm playing with my boss. Maybe that was part of it.
Well, if you can't perform under pressure, you grow a crack under pressure, when can we count on you?
Yeah, well, and maybe when I'm playing next to SJ Tui or something. I don't know. Maybe that's what will alleviate some of the pressure on me. So, but we're going to have that. That's going to be fun today.
So they had this big cookout this weekend. I that's the other thing that happens with Morris now. You talk about things that happen now that didn't happen before. What was this big cookout they had this weekend? They invited all the recruits in. They did this last year, and they did it again this year. And I think this was kind of a brainchild somewhat of John Chavis, or at least he is involved in the planning of the cookout to some degree, it appears.
He looks like he could be a guy that'd be all about some cookouts.
Looks like he knows his way around a grill.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they've done this, like you said, last year, and it's one of those events that they try to not only bring recruits to, possible recruits too, but also have team members, and Hunter Yurecek was there as well. Just kind of like a much more laid back, chill out, relaxing type of visit, unofficially, for a lot of these people. And who doesn't enjoy a cookout? Well, who doesn't love barbecue next to the swimming pool?
You're getting to that time where you're seeing things like a week or so ago, the coaches, the staff, not just the assistant coaches and Chad Morris, but the support staff and everyone around them went over to North Central Arkansas. We were speaking of that. They stayed at Gaston's. They played some golf at Big Creek. You're starting to see some of these events, being talked about. And it's just a sign that all the real intense, long hours, practices, watching film, all of the heavy lifting is getting ready to begin.
Mm-hmm.
These are all signs of what's to come in days ahead. And we're not down to weeks now. We're down to days. So
yeah. Just a mere 33 days.
You do some things like this to have some fun, relieve some of the tension that's pending with your staff, your players, include their families as much as you can, because everybody's hours are going to get eaten up here pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. And especially
everybody's going to be on edge.
Well, especially with something like recruiting, and this is something I want to dive into later in the show, too. When it comes to recruiting, seeing something like this is nothing like 10 years ago, and this is not against anybody. I'm just showing how it's... The game has changed in recruiting. 10 years ago, First of all, I don't know if this thing would have even been allowed under NCAA rules, but you never would have really even heard of something like this unless it was Bruce Pearl doing one that shouldn't have been going on. But
this is what I called sanctioned smoking this weekend. Yeah, sanctioned.
Exactly. It's allowed. So, you know, it's amazing just how things have changed in recruiting and how a lot of different programs approach it. It's almost getting to the point now where it's no longer about doing specific things. It's about doing things that nobody really thinks of or nobody really does to try to stand out and be unique, which is what Arkansas is doing with this cookout. I don't think that no one's doing this cookout. I'm sure that there are other schools that do it, but if you're a place like Arkansas and if you're a coach like Chad Morris and you have a 2-10 season under your belt the year before and you're having to recruit your way out of it, you got to be unique. You got to be innovative. You got to be creative when it comes to trying to stand out among the big boys. And I think that having something like this cookout is one of the reasons why they do it, is to try to stand out. And it's also, again, you know, I think that in recruiting too, and I'm sure it's just like in any facts of life, that you want to be able to have something or do, put on an event that everyone enjoys. And I don't know, Tommy, I don't think, have you ever met anybody that doesn't enjoy a cookout?
I have, and I don't want to be around them.
No. In fact, you don't want to be friends with them. You question their loyalty to the country. I mean, it's just...
I mean, even a vegetarian can enjoy a good cookout. Yeah. They'll bring some vegetables. He'll grill me these vegetables.
Yeah, grill the vegetables. You're still next to the pool. Everybody likes being next to a body of water in July, right? On a Saturday? Here, it's smelling the smoke off the grill.
Yeah, there's just something about it.
It's a special time, and especially these young kids, these 17, 18, 19-year-old kids, they love that type of atmosphere as well, where they can just kick back, relax, and have some fun. So I think it's a great idea by Chad Morris, and I think that it's been really successful. I know it was last year when it came to commitments. We'll see how it plays out this year as far as those guys that were invited and showed up to it. But, you know, these are the things that if you're a program like Arkansas, you got to stand out in a certain way.
Do we need to have a Morning Rush cookout before the season begins?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure. Didn't we have one last year of sorts?
Did we?
I remember we came to your house and you cooked out for us.
What do we need to have? Maybe we need to have a preseason cookout.
You got to give me like a range of dates, and then we can decide.
Oh, is your schedule that tight?
No, it's just a matter of what type of food I want during
period
of time.
If it's preseason, I mean, it's, you know, it's going to be coming soon. Okay. You know?
But I'm saying, you know, if it was maybe, you know, if you were doing it in late in June, it could have been like a shrimp boil, which I'm a big fan of. I don't know if you do shrimp boils or not.
Ahoy polloi. No, I mean, we don't live on Melody Lane over here, you know.
A shrimp that expensive for Tommy Kraft? Please.
You want lobster tail to go with it?
You're talking about the guy, Tommy.
Is that a cookout?
No, it's a shrimp boil.
Right. It's a different category.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a shrimp because it's like, is a
no, we need meat and fire. So, I mean, I appreciate a good shrimp boil as much as anyone.
Kind of like, you know.
But we need to start with charcoal or wood. At a minimum, propane.
At a minimum, yeah.
At a minimum, propane.
Yeah. What's that?
I know you heat the water, but we can do better than boiling water.
Yeah. What's that? I mean, you do fish fries that could be considered those types of things, too.
So, we can grill some shrimp.
Yeah. Do something like that. We'll show up.
We may have to plan a Morning Rush preseason cookout.
Yeah. Well,
do we need a staff retreat?
Yeah, I don't know why you're asking us these questions.
I'll be interested in going.
We're all on board. And the thing is, you know, our apartment isn't exactly set up to host parties. So it may
or
have to
a retreat.
Be or a retreat. So unless you just want to hang out and pet Rowdy for a while, that's about the extent of the excitement. Jeez, so,
what time does that begin?
Yeah.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Lemon Tea, a unique twist on America's favorite light lager.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
I thought about a particular topic that I really dived into and did some research, talked with some people, a study, if you will. You know, I think I learned about those in college.
That
about
sounds like a
studies.
Lot of work on the weekend.
Yeah, case studies, I think is what it's called. But we'll call it that. I don't think it was actually a case study, but it sounds right. But over the weekend, I was thinking about this upcoming football season. We know, and we've talked about how, for instance, important game two is for Arkansas against Ole Miss. It's kind of the make or break of the season where it will be, I think, the difference of you making a bowl game or you not making a bowl game this year. I think we're kind of all in agreement there. For
the Ole Miss game?
The Ole Miss game.
I think it would be very difficult. I think it's going to be very difficult to make a bowl game if you don't have four wins under your belt at the halfway point. I think it has to probably include an Ole Miss win.
Yeah, because you know, you in the SEC, especially the SEC West, you're not getting a lot of opportunities.
I'll put it this way. You better split between You better win two out of the three, perhaps, you could say, between Ole Miss, A&M, and Kentucky to get where you want to be this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the rest of the – because you don't want to have to
– We know the back half is loaded with LSU, Alabama, Auburn, Mississippi State.
Right. And you'd
and
like –
Missouri. I mean, we've been kind of playing down Missouri, but everybody else is high on Missouri mm-hmm. right now.
Again, it's to me about Missouri is going to depend on whether or not they get the postseason ban lifted or not in their appeals process, because I think that's going to be a big difference. But either way, we know the importance of that game, and we know the importance of particular games, and we know the importance – of particular players that have come in and the pressure that's on them to, hey, you got to be able to accomplish these things. But here's the question I have, Tommy, just looking at the big picture, not just specifically this season, but the big picture. If Chad Morris does not work out at Arkansas, and what I mean is that they say they only win three or four games this year, and then the next year is not much better. They only win five games. They miss the postseason three straight years to start off Chad Morris's tenure. Say if that was it. And they have to move a different direction with Chad Morris, and they understand, hey, this is just not going to work out. Does that type of move in that type of situation set the program back tremendously?
I mean, how much more can the program be set back? I mean, if you want to base it on wins and losses, I mean, you two wins last year. If you went to three or four, I mean,
I think relevancy is
could be changed. Yeah, there's some people of the belief that Chad Morris is the coach that's going to set the table for the next coach to take off again, for this program to take off. I think there's still external factors that have to change in order for, no matter who coaches this program, who leads this program, for some outside things have to change. And what I mean by that is other schools around the West. I'm not talking necessarily Saban's got to quit. A lot of schools are counting on that. But I just think there's some other things that got to adjust before mm-hmm. Arkansas can have the big-time success.
Right. And I guess what I'm referring to when I say set the program back and whatnot is because, to me, there's still a big difference. And, say, if you're looking at Power 5 teams, for instance, there's mm-hmm. still a big difference between Arkansas and Kansas, for instance.
Yes.
Arkansas is still a better program than Kansas.
Yes.
They're a better program than Indiana, you know, a program like that. They're a better program than a Syracuse.
But two or three more years of this in a row, and you're approaching that level.
And that's where I'm going to, because here's the thing, Tommy. If you just look back in the history, there's always been this confidence. Even no matter who the coach was, and no matter how badly the coach did or all the problems that came along with it, Razorback fans have always felt like, well, if this doesn't work out with this particular coach, we are still a strong enough program to go and hire a big-time coach.
Mm-hmm.
Because when Houston Nutt was here, you felt like, hey, if we got rid of Nutt, we could bring in somebody pretty big-time. And you did, essentially, with Bobby Petrino. And especially when Bobby Petrino got fired, you're like, we're still a big-time program.
Yes.
We can bring in some big-time coach.
We're still relevant.
Yeah, we're still relevant into the grand scheme of things. Brett Bielema comes in, and at the time, was a big-time coach, big-time hire. And even when towards the end of his tenure, you're like, it sucks, but we're still a relevant enough program to where we can go out and we can still get a big-time coach. You hired Chad Morris. You flirted with Gus Malzahn. I know a lot of people wanted Malzahn or somebody else that was not named Chad Morris because they didn't feel like that was a big enough name.
They didn't know the name.
Yeah. Exactly. And so now you're at a point to where if you don't win under Chad Morris, if you don't take that next step and you slip into a three or four straight years of not making the postseason, to me that starts to really teeter with the fact that you no longer will have that confidence you can go out and get somebody big.
There's always been tiers in this conference, and Arkansas's briefly touched the top tier, never really been what I would call a top tier SEC football program, always kind of been in that next stage.
And, yeah,
and there was always the Vanderbilts and the Mississippis and the Ole Misses,
Kentucky,
and the Kentuckys in that bottom shelf. And there's no denying that the last 4 years, the Vanderbilts, the Kentuckys, and certainly the Mississippi schools have been better than Arkansas. I mean, the last time Arkansas beat Vanderbilt, and I know they don't play regularly, but was what, 2011? And it took Jerry Franklin with a scoop and score to make that happen? Mm-hmm. Nearly got beat that day. So, I mean, and Kentucky's beaten Arkansas more than Arkansas's beaten Kentucky in recent years. I know John L. got that win, but Arkansas hadn't had a lot of success against. I mean, you just look at how things have played out, and there's been more years in recent times where Arkansas over this last 7 years or so has not been as good as those schools. So it's pretty clearly defined where you're at and what tier, what shelf you're on in this league if you're the Arkansas football program.
Mm-hmm. And that's the issue that comes into play, is that you almost become scared of becoming irrelevant. You become scared that at some point in time, your program, your team, your school that you love so much is going to completely fall back into irrelevancy.
Yep.
And you will become something like a Kansas, like an Indiana, like these programs that are just overlooked, don't care about, because you're like, hey, who cares about those? Well, those are programs. I'm not saying that, maybe that's way too harsh of a way of looking at it, because I still think you're always going to have support and always going to be in a position in the SEC to be able to be relevant. But the last thing you ever want to do is get to a point to where you're not confident you can get out of the hole that you're in. You don't feel good about ever getting out of the hole that you're in. And if Chad Morris is unable to get it going, like, are you? I mean, what situation is this program going to find itself when they're looking for a new coach and they're like, well, we've missed the bowl games for five straight seasons. Who wants to come in here and take over this?
To me, it's you can't miss on a third straight hire. And I don't count John L.
No, don't.
And a lot of people want to say, well, the John L. Smith hire was the worst hire. And listen, that was an interim deal.
That was not the worst hire.
I don't count. I mean, it's like that didn't even happen.
Right.
Extract it from history. Remove it from the history book. But when you look at Bielema, obviously didn't work out. If Chad Morris doesn't work out, and then the third coach in a row, then I would think this could be a program that could be teetering on the edge of some of these, the Indianas and the Kansases of college football.
Yeah.
Kansas is on its way up, or should be, with a brand name like Les Miles in charge. And that's what you need. You need a brand name. Now, Chad Morris is not a brand name. Can he become a brand name at Arkansas?
Sure.
Got to become one somewhere if you're ever going to be one. So, to me, I'm not concerned about slipping off into the abyss of college football unless three straight coaches come in here and try for 4 to 5 seasons and can't move the needle.
Yeah. Well, and you want me to ask you, Tommy, because you were obviously a little older and remember this time, but that time where it was during the era of the joining the SEC, post Ken Hatfield, and
Jack Crow
came in, and you had Joe Kynes as the interim, and then you went right into Danny Ford. Was this time that you're in right now in Arkansas football, was it similar to that time where there was a lot of unknown, there was a lot of skepticism, there was a lot of just feeling like you weren't going to compete?
Well, to me, it's more prolonged right now, because as tough as the early 90s were, you had that 95 season where you made the SEC championship game. Madre Hill, Barry Lunny, that team, they got smoked by Florida. I think it's 35-3.
Yeah, it was not close.
In that championship game, and you end up in the Carquest Bowl.
Playing North Carolina
in Miami. And you got the shaft. And it wasn't one like the best Razorback football team of the 90s or anything like that, but they did make the SEC championship. You had just enough of a sustaining presence with your football program in the midst of that. And then obviously Danny Ford didn't work out in 96 and 97, and here comes Houston up for 98. And that's really when the resurgence came. You can trace it all back to Ken Hatfield, who won back-to-back Southwest Conference championships, and then they hand the program over to a coordinator. And Broyles talked about this many times before his passing, that going with an offensive coordinator and not a experienced head coach was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, with a failed Jack Crow experiment, it set this program on a path that I think it's been very different since then.
Yeah.
And if I remember right, we can ask Clay this in the next hour. Ken Hatfield left in February. I mean, in today's times, if he had a coaching change, it would have been done in December or January, not February.
So. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing, is you just have to look at the recent history and try to compare it and try to make sense of it all. But I just think it's interesting to think about, if it does go south, if things just don't work out with Chad Morris, where are you as a program?
To me, and we'll have this discussion with Clay coming up on the other side of the top of the hour. To me, you're not going to slip off into the deep, dark hole of college football, which is occupied with the Indianas and the Kansas, until you get through a third coach's tenure that didn't work out. And at that point, then how long are you talking about? 2013 to through the 17 seasons, 17, you know, Chad Morris is going to be here, even if it went horribly wrong, through at least 22. I mean, you'd be talking about 15 years. I think that would, and I don't think Arkansas is going to have, God, I hope not. I just don't think Arkansas is going to be a swing and a miss on three coaches. I think Chad Morris is going to, at a minimum, set the table for the next coach. At a minimum. And I think with the assistants he's got around him, with John Chavis, the Steve Caldwells, and that's really where Bielema set the table for some, what success he had was the great staff he had to begin that he couldn't replace.
Yeah.
That's going to be one of the big tests also. We talk about, can Chad Morris follow up this recruiting class and stack recruiting classes? The next challenge is going to come when you start having some level of success and an A&M comes calling. Texas. Some of the, you know, because he's got a lot of guys on that staff, some of these younger guys with Texas ties.
Yeah.
What happens when mama calls, you know, whether it's A&M or for some of these guys, Texas, or whether it's Baylor or TCU or something closer to home? When mama calls and then he has to replace some of these guys, where's your coaching tree at?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a big crossroads for Chad Morris that might be just months down the road following this season. Who knows?
Yeah.
Because that's where Bielema really ultimately, you know, failed to succeed at Arkansas. A big part of that was not having second-line assistants to come in behind that great first staff he put.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Lemon Tea, a unique twist on America's favorite light lager.
Give is to Alex Collins, straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house.
Joined by Clay Henry, publisher of Hogs Illustrated, right now in the Morning Rush. He'll be with us every Monday and Friday, 7 to 9 o'clock throughout football season. So really looking forward to catching up with him every single Monday and Friday.
And then when practice gets underway and there's something worth talking about, we're gonna make him come on for a few minutes. Hold on a second.
We can't overwork the guy. I mean,
he's got his AARP card now and his Medicare card. I mean, he can, you know, a few extra minutes here and there if something's happening. I'm sure Clay would love to do that.
Yeah, I'm going to the Gold Tees today, just so y'all know.
Well, I may be joining you over there, honestly, Clay. Just to,
you know, 29-year-olds do not go to the Gold Tees.
Well, I'm glad that you think I'm 29 too. So I'll take that. I'm actually 30, Clay. I hit the 30 mark, so I can't use that excuse anymore.
Hey, it's all downhill. You mean to tell you about some of the things that happened at 42.
Oh, well, I mean, as much as I'd love to hear that, is it going to depress me?
You'll need glasses. That's the first thing. I remember I was 42, and I was sitting in Sunday school class, and John Bozeman, who's an eye doctor, Senator Bozeman, then is beside me, and I was holding the quarterly out, and he started laughing. He says, "Your arm's not long enough. See me in the morning."
Well, I can't wait to get to that point in my life. Yeah. It sounds like a great time.
So, all right, fall practice getting underway. Well, I don't know why we call it fall. It's going to be hot. It's going to be summertime weather when we get there. But players are less than a week away from reporting, which they already have been on campus working through the summer. So what is it these first few days that matter more than anything, Clay? And I don't know how much of this that Chad Morris is going to let us see, but what are the things you want to hear after practice, these first few days of practice? Well,
so we've got these stud freshmen, you know, that are finally able to, you know, all of them, I guess, will be here at this point. You had some that were here in the spring. But for a true freshman to contribute that first year, they need all of August. They need every bit of the installation, you know, the to grasp the system and everything. They need to be out there in practice. And that usually doesn't happen. They'll turn an ankle, pull a hamstring or a little bit, you know, a little nagging injuries, but it keeps you from practicing and you get behind. And sometimes you don't ever catch up. And I remember that happened last year with Andrew Parker. And, you know, he was trying to play catch up in the spring. And he's one of those linebackers that has the SEC speed, but he didn't have the fall because of, you know, and it's really easy for those young players to get a little nick, and they don't have the muscle mass that protects them, as they start doing the middle drills and the things. But So I just want to hear after a week, hey, you know, these young guys are practicing and they're all 100% healthy, because that's a critical aspect to get that new talent on the field.
Well, I mean, you talk about the health, and I think it's important for any program, but especially for Arkansas, where the depth isn't exactly there by and large at most positions. But it was funny, too, because what was it last year, Clay? We kept hearing from Chad Morris that, you know, the install of offense is about at 30%, I think was what the percentage that Chad Morris kept throwing out. So does that mean by this time, by football season start, are we going to have, you know, 50, 60%, 80%, 100%? I mean, what's the next step as far as making sure that they are continuing to install the offense to where – you're going to have more pieces and more parts of it being exposed and paid attention to in actual games this year?
Well, you've got a group of freshman wide receivers, and you go as fast as what those guys can go. Trey Knox, Hudson Henry, you know, of course, wasn't here in the spring, the tight end from Little Rock, and five-star. So, yeah, and so that those guys will still be going at a slower pace. But the job that Ben Hicks had this summer, which is really important, and we'll hear a little bit about this today, I'm sure, is Nick Starkel. How is he with the learning of the offense? And so how competitive is this first month going to be, at quarterback? In and I'm sure this will be asked today, Coach, when are you going to pick the starting quarterback? And that's important, because when you do, that guy's going to get 80% of the snaps in practice. So I think early on you're going to see Starkel and Hicks, you know, split it 60-40, 50-50, whatever it may be. But it's going to be more equal early. But at some point you need your guy in to get the snaps. And I think that as much as anything, that held back the team last year because they couldn't pick. I mean, it was Ty Story, and then it was Cole Kelly, then it was Cole Kelly, then it was Ty Story, and then it'd be a bad quarter, and then the other guy would play. And the development of the offense was stunted because of the quarterback competition. And as much as everybody wants to see Starkel, if Hicks is the guy, then that's who needs to get the practice snaps, and that's who needs to get the game snaps. And it doesn't need to be where the fans get to pick. The coach needs to pick and then say, this is our guy. And then everybody just has to kind of go with it.
Well, Cole, you mentioned last year with the whole way they handled Ty Story and Cole Kelly and that. Do you think that that was more that they couldn't figure out who actually was the better quarterback? Was it like a Jekyll and Hyde deal where one guy looked really good in practice, but then in the game they didn't show up? I mean, what was the reasoning behind the struggle of trying to figure out who's the guy last year?
Well, I think they both sucked. I mean, I mean, it just did. There was never a glimpse where you said, that is the guy. Every time you saw one, you would say, well, no, it's not him. Maybe it's the other guy. And boy, that's a losing battle. Yeah. And I mean, it's a 2-10 battle, I guess is what it is.
Yeah.
But there was never anything solid that made you think, okay. I mean, the best thing that Ty Story did was, okay, the pocket's collapsing. I'm going to get six. I'm going to get eight. And that was almost, you know, bad, because by the time they got to the Ole Miss game and that was their play, you know, when they lost both Whaley and Boyd, well, I mean, they teed off on him. You don't want it to be, all right, that's the play that we have to run on third and eight, is the quarterback – spreads him out and everybody's a man to man, and he goes and gets him nine before he gets his head taken off.
And can you really figure that out when you put green jerseys on these guys, or whatever protective jersey you put on these guys? Can you really figure out who your quarterback is when you don't go live to some degree? And that doesn't mean you have to let the defense tee off on them. But see, Clay, I think they'd have figured it out sooner, earlier in camp last year, if they'd had some idea that, you know, Cole Kelly's mobility and ability to get out of the pocket and turn nothing into 3 or 4 yards doesn't exist. And at least Ty Story can do that. I don't know that you – can you figure that out without going live?
Well, here's the good news, and it's also bad news. Neither one of these guys are that mobile. I mean, they're not – I mean, KJ Jefferson is the one that, if you want to break it down, that can make somebody miss, and it's got the speed to – you know, to beat an SEC defense with his feet. Starkel isn't. Starkel, that's not what he – Starkel's got a gun. Hicks may have, you know, a mix of a little bit of ability to run and, you know, and can throw it around. But there, you know, Starkle's not mobile. I mean, the people that watched him in high school that I've talked to say, nah, he's going to sit in the pocket. And he might float a little bit. What he does is he delivers the ball and he can hit that guy that's got speed on the slant. He's able to time that up. So, but I don't think either one of these guys are going to dazzle you with anything like a, you know, they're not Quinn Grovey, they're not Matt Jones, they're not Billy Moore, they're not, you know, I mean, Barry Lunny might have been more mobile than these guys.
So you would see no value. Would you see any value in going live for a few practices? And again,
Zero.
Okay.
Zero.
No value.
I mean, all you don't want to risk getting one of these guys lit up in practice. You know, I've never thought fall was the time to hit your quarterbacks in the spring. And the reason I say that is Danny Ford told me, he says, don't ever hit your quarterbacks in the fall, hit them in the spring. And he says, Chad Morris has practiced early in the spring for that very reason. So if you get somebody hurt, you got another month to heal up. No, I wouldn't do that, Tommy.
Well, it makes me wonder too, Clay. You mentioned the quarterbacks that they have and how it seems like right now they're all have different strengths, or at least they're different types of quarterback. I think it was under Petrino where it was almost like he had a playbook for Ryan Mount, a playbook for Tyler Wilson, and a playbook for Brandon Mitchell. Now, in the core part of it, the foundation of the playbook may have been the same, but there was always just different plays and different things you need to study on. I'm wondering if Chad Morris kind of does the same thing with his quarterbacks of utilizing their strengths and having a playbook built around what exactly they're trying to do and what they're good at.
You know, you give them the playbook, but you have calls out of that playbook for one or the other. I think you're exactly right, John, and that's a good point because you saw that definitely when Mallett got hurt in that in the game down
Auburn.
At Auburn,
yeah, Auburn
with Cam Newton, I think, and Tyler Wilson came in, and they had three plays for him, and they lit him up, and he could flat out run those three plays. And it was a couple of patterns that, you know, and I think the target in those plays was Jarius Wright. And, I mean, they got some chunk yards. And then eventually, I guess they'd seen it, you know, for two quarters, Auburn got an interception. They set somebody, you know, deep in a zone to thwart that. So, you know, but, yeah, I think that you if you're Joe Craddock, you're making notes in practice this month. What does Starkle do really well, and what does, you know, you probably have an idea about Hicks already. But it also just comes down to what the rest of the guys can do. What's your offensive line? How they can protect? Do you got to roll them out to give them some time? You know, there's things about this offense that are pretty slick, and I like Boyd and I like Whaley, and I want to see if Whaley's a little bit lighter. That was the goal last spring, is to pick up a step and get a little wiggle with him. You know, Cheyenne, CJ, whatever he's going by these days, O'Grady. He's still CJ to me until he has a consistent month. Then he can be Cheyenne with me. I want to see him earn the name that he prefers. And if he doesn't, I'll keep calling him CJ just to see if I can make him mad. But, you know, to see if he's going to come out of the gate and be, you know, an NFL player instead of a high school player. I mean, every once in a while, he just reverts to being a high school kid, just a knucklehead. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things I want to see. And is Trey Knox a little bigger? And, you know, can he handle press coverage a little bit? Because that's what I didn't see last spring, is you put somebody up in his grill and it bothered him a little bit. And because he wasn't strong enough in the upper body to shuck a, you know, a safety that walked up. So, did I answer your question?
Yes, you did. You did a great job, Clay. You did a great job.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Lemon Tea, a unique twist on America's favorite light lager.
Now, Clay Henry, publisher of Hogs Illustrated, joins us on the show. And again, a reminder, he's going to be joining us every Monday and Friday from 7 to 9 here on the Morning Rush. And Clay, we have a few people that have sent us some text messages this morning wanting to get your thoughts and opinions on particular topics. I'm going to throw them at you, put you on the spot, and I know you won't let me down. The first one comes from Tucker in Sherwood. He says, what does Clay want to see from the coaches as far as in-game decisions go this season?
Yeah, I'd like to see them. You know, I want to see what's going to happen after they've scored their 12th touchdown. Are they, you know, are they putting the backup place kicker in? That will be a fun decision that I watch. And, you know, it's like, are we is Connor Limpert's leg tired out and we're going to put in the backup place kicker and give him some? No, I'm teasing. But, I mean, that's like, you know, I asked my dad one time, I want you to predict the season, and he sent me back this column for Hogs Illustrated, and it was 12-0. And I was like, oh, you forgot to pick the postseason.
So,
but, you know, yeah, it's, you know, I want to see something fun. It was not fun last year. And, you know, those trips to Starkville and Columbia to end the year, I mean, there was nothing left in the tank for those players. And, you know, they'd been whipped. So it's, you know, as far as in-game decisions, yeah, you'd like to, you want to see the third quarter them to come up with something that, you know, they scripted some stuff in the first half where, you know, where they hit some plays, but they couldn't put it together. But to be able to run the ball when the other team knows you're going to run it, that's the key. And I'm not a big, okay, our coaches can't call plays or they don't make in-game adjustments or this. I don't leave the stadium feeling that. Most of the time it's like, boy, they need to do a better job in recruiting. If there's a bad result, you know, I just think, well, it's there. Guys, it was years ago I was watching as a young college football writer, I was covering the Big Four out of the Tulsa World, and you covered Arkansas one week. Lou Holtz was the coach. Jimmy Johnson was Oklahoma State, and Barry Switzer was at Oklahoma. And I thought the best coach of all those guys was Barry Switzer. And it, you know, all once it dawned on me about 3 or 4 years later that it wasn't that he was the best coach, he was the best recruiter. Because all at once, Jimmy Johnson is at Miami, and his players were so much better than everybody else's that, you know, you thought, well, he's a great coach. Well, it comes down to the Jimmys and the Joes.
As we say, that game was won in February. I guess you can now say December. That, you know, when you lose a game and you get beat badly, well, they won that game in February, you know, back when signing day was actually mattered in February. But I'm interested in to see how much confidence this coaching staff has in their team. And you, like you said, when it's time to run the ball and everybody in the stadium knows you're going to run the ball and it's third and one, it's fourth and short. We remember the Colorado State game.
Absolutely, you know,
Tommy. What kind of calls are they going to make because of their belief in their offensive line, their belief in the running backs, in these short yardage situations? That's, to me, the interesting thing is, do you bring the punter out on the field or do you go for it because you believe in your team?
Yeah, I think you're right. And that was the play that everybody remembers. And you know, fourth and inches, I think they got a bad spot, you know, on the play before where the receiver is kind of running a little comeback and he runs out of bounds and, you know, they marked him where he ran out of bounds, but he'd come back about a yard and it was because the defensive back pushed him back and they got the wrong spot. And from that point in the game, it was a different deal. And you think, well, you could go for it fourth and about 4 inches. They had stopped him on that all game, and that's what everybody will look back and it's like, but I think you're right, Tommy. It's like he didn't know what he had in his offensive line. Mm-hmm. Where was he going to get that 6 inches?
Yeah.
And you know, the defense has been playing pretty good at that point. You just, you know, you punt him back, make him go 95 yards. Well, they did. And the game flipped and you lost the momentum and it was a bad deal. I mean, that was one of the worst feelings that I've ever been on a road trip at Arkansas where you're like, man, you got to win this game. And they did.
Yeah. Well, and you brought up the decisions that they make and how they have to make sure that not only are they having confidence in their team, but, you know, I think things were so bad last year because I felt the same way, Clay. When I was leaving games and after I got them watching games, I'm sure that there were times where it was like, oh, my goodness, why did you make that decision? Why did you go with that call? Why did you do this? Why did you do that? But essentially, it was so overshadowed by they just got to get more talent in here. They got to recruit better. They got to be able to get his guys in here. And sometimes it's like I can't even remember, except for the couple of the plays here and there, where I look back on and say, you know what, Chad Morris and the staff probably shouldn't have made that decision here. Probably shouldn't have used that timeout here. Probably shouldn't have done this, that, and the other. But this year I feel like I'm going to be more confident in watching for that, because now he has a roster that's more suited to what he's trying to do. Not completely. It's not like it's going to be perfect. There's going to be still some issues. But it seems like that now that they actually have guys in place that are going to be able to run the offense, go with what they're trying to do, we can actually focus more on, when we're watching these games, seeing those decisions, seeing how they handle the adversity, seeing how they handle with 5 minutes to go, you're down by 4 points and you have 80 yards to go for a touchdown. What kind of play calls do they go with and how fast they go tempo? It just feels like we didn't get to be able to see much of that because the talent was so bad.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, it's a different situation. I mean, Rakeem Boyd's been here a year, basically 12 months, because this is about when he got here last year. Dorian Gerald, I mean, those were the two JUCO guys. Well, you're going to get a good year out of both of them. And Dorian Gerald might be the difference maker on defense that we thought last year, but you know, he was overweight. I mean, he thought he needed that weight to play in the SEC. John Chavis is like, no, it's you need to be lighter. You need to be quicker. Speed is the deal in the SEC. I think you'll see a faster team, and that's going to help more than play calling. I mean, yeah. If you know, they're going to get to where they can make plays in space because of their speed on both sides of the ball. And the last 3 years, really 4 years, Arkansas looked slow to me. And, you know, I kept hearing people that, like, oh, they're out of shape. I don't know that they were out of shape. I just don't think they were fast twitch guys. And that's what you need to have in the SEC.
You bring up Rakeem Boyd, and he's been here 12 months, as you said right now. How good can he be this year? Because we saw the 300-yard games that he had last year, and what, the first back since Darren McFadden to get 100 yards against Alabama. So, I mean, there's a lot of hope and promise with Rakeem Boyd. How good a season can Boyd have this year?
Oh, he can be a different dude. I mean, he's an Alex Collins. I mean, he's not Darren McFadden, but he might be a Felix Jones. I mean, he's a first two round kind of back in the NFL. I mean, what I see with him is when he makes contact, he sinks his hips and drives his legs, and there's 2 to 3 more yards. And if he's even with you, then he's leaving you. And that's what they ache for, is somebody that you give them a crease, and you give them an angle, or you do scheme up a play. Everybody wants to see them scheme up something. And you get him into space, he's going to take it to the house against just about everybody in the SEC. And that makes you a better play caller. Just trust me, guys. When you have a guy like that, all at once is like, hey, I like that play. Well, gave the ball the right guy in the right spot. There's no doubt.
Yeah. And I see these Ty posts these highlights every day counting down to the season, and you see some of these old McFadden plays or Cedric Cobb's plays, Felix Jones plays. The explosiveness, and I know they're highlights, but the explosiveness when they hit the line, hit the hole, and then how they burst through the second level of the defense, that's just something Arkansas has been missing for a while. And I don't know if that's line or if that's backs or if that's just the team speed you're talking about, but that's been the difference between good and great at Arkansas.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to Nile Davis. I mean,
yeah.
And I mean, Alex sometimes got caught. And I mean, he had good speed, but he didn't have that 4.38 kind of, you know, afterburner of Fred Talley. I give Houston Nutt credit. He had one of those guys, it seemed like, every year, and some years he had two. And it makes a difference whether you're a Madre Hill, a Cedric Cobbs, Fred Talley, Felix Jones, Darren McFadden. And then he had some other guys like, you know, Chris Chikuma, Brandon Nick. I mean, it's a Peyton Hillis. Those were really big-time backs. And he stacked them up there pretty good. And then he got some that he could convert to defense, like an Eddie Jackson. He came as a tailback and, you know, ended up being a safety that had world-class speed. So that speed is critical. You know, you asked earlier, like, what are some of the things that you're hopeful for, you know, that kind of come out of August? Treylon Burks and Jalen Catalan being healthy and being able to be plugged in and play this year. I mean, those are five-star guys. that are critical to the, you know, the future of this program. I mean, just bell cow type players that are both leaders and rare talents. So, I mean, it's a safety, of the type of a honey badger, from LSU. This is what Catalon can beat. Turnover waiting to happen. I mean, gets his hands on the ball, so strong, figures it out before anybody else is in his first one to the ball, and he's blowing up a play. And so they got some guys that, how long is it going to take these stars from this last recruiting class to show up? And I bet they get to play, but you may still have some growing pains with youngsters.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.